You're tuned to 91.7 KAXE, 90.5 KBXE. I'm Tammy Bobrowski, and you're listening to a special edition of What We're Reading. Today, we're hearing about books that come highly recommended for those of you who, in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, want to understand how we got here and how to move forward. We're talking with some local experts, Bemidji State University faculty members, who are giving us their book recommendations and some really important perspective and context tying these books to what's going on in current events.
My name is Dennis Lunt, and I am assistant professor of philosophy at Bemidji State University. And I'm an ethicist, to keep it short. I study right and wrong and good and bad and all that fun space in between. So as you can imagine, these last few weeks have been really kind of troubling and heartbreaking, but they've also been inspiring. You know, as a teacher, it's amazing to see your students out in front and saying that their lives matter, saying other people's lives matter. As a teacher, you really can't ask for more than that. I find myself wanting to live up to and teach up to the example of those students. When I'm teaching, and really when I'm researching too, I tend to use literature a lot. So if you take my ethics class, we will often begin our conversation on gun violence, on abortion, on euthanasia, and those other kind of topics. We'll start actually with stories and poetry and music. And that often kind of confuses my students because they show up for an ethics class and they're expecting really dry philosophy by dudes in togas and beards. And they do get some of that, don't get me wrong. But the stories serve to get people introduced to a topic, but it also makes them, it takes us outside of ourselves. It acquaints us with a world where the rules that we're used to may not work for other people, or other people may be playing by a different set of rules than we are used to. And in ethics, that's absolutely necessary. To be able to imagine a world in someone else's shoes instead of assuming that every issue is about us. You asked me about some of the stories that I use as an ethicist when I'm teaching and researching, and a couple came to mind. There's a ton of good examples. And these are two that have been especially important for me to read. I'm a white dude, and my race gives me a certain vantage point on the world, but it also creates blind spots in how I look at the world. And so these stories help me imagine a world that does not revolve around me. There are a lot of stories out there that sort of are centered on the way I think about things, but I try to, as best I can, think about the world that doesn't revolve around me, and this literature kind of brings me there. Moshe Hamid wrote a novel called Exit West. Hamid is a Pakistani-American. He's written a few novels, but this one really grabbed my attention. I like fantasy fiction. I grew up reading Lord of the Rings and other kind of magic world stories about magical worlds. And this is kind of a fantasy fiction about the life of two refugees. Our two characters are Syed and Nadia. And they are lovers from very different parts of an unnamed city. It's kind of implied that it's kind of like Pakistan or Afghanistan. And the world around them is slowly becoming a war zone. And their lives are becoming sort of increasingly fraught as these two young people are trying to sort out their relationship. In the middle of all this, here's the fantasy element, doors randomly start turning into portals to other parts of the world. Any given door will randomly turn into a door to another part of the world. So somewhere in Lebanon, you can step through a door and suddenly you're in San Francisco. And this creates an opportunity for refugees like Syed and Nadia, who get to escape a war zone. And the story is about them going through these doors and trying to navigate a world that isn't ready for them, all the while trying to figure out what their relationship looks like. And it's this amazing, short, and beautiful story because it's really about two things. On the one hand, it's about their relationship. And even if you've not had a life like Syed and Nadia's, you can see some part of yourself in their attempt to think about each other and think about what their relationship means. It's really kind of a beautiful love story, but it's taking place in a setting where they are not welcome. They are taking risks that I have never been asked to take. And so it becomes an attempt to, it becomes a way for me to think about the place of refugees. And it doesn't reduce them down to victims who just need help. And it also doesn't reduce them down to what some racists have termed refugees as invasive species. It humanizes them and treats them as people who are trying to sort themselves out in this impossible situation. And for me, that's very important. In the United States, our conversation about refugees is often very self-centered. We want to know what a refugee's life means for my safety, my job, my country's demographics. And what's lost in the conversation is the human being that's trying to live in an impossible situation. If you'll pardon me for getting on a soapbox, as an ethicist and as an American and as a practicing Christian, this really distresses me. The promise of America is for everyone. When we pretend that refugees and immigrants are not people, we're giving up on them and we're also giving up on our own identity. So the second book that came to mind when you contacted me is James Welch's Winter in the Blood. And he published that in 1974. I think it was his debut novel. And it's about a veteran who has returned home from war to the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation. This is in Montana. And at first I found him difficult to connect with because he's very distant from the world. He's very disconnected from the people around him. It's almost like he's walking through a haze. And so when you start reading, you're thinking, boy, this guy is really not connecting with the people around him. But James Welch actually uses that to tell you about his life. That haze he's living in is the result of a lot of factors. It's partly post-traumatic stress from the war. Remember, he's a veteran and he's seen some combat. But it's also about all these different relationships that we're introduced to. And over time, you start to see how tragedies in his family and even the tragedies visited on people in his reservation, in his community, all of that has shaped him. It's like pain in his world is like a rock that's been thrown in a lake, and those ripples eventually reach him. And he's been, he's had these kind of waves of trauma that have shaped him as a person. And I think, kind of like my earlier book, it humanizes him without turning him into a victim and without sort of talking down to him. When I moved to Minnesota, I started working with Native students for the first time in my career. And this book really helped me get my head around what my Native colleagues and Native students refer to as generational trauma. That was a term I hadn't heard when I moved to Minnesota 6 years ago. But this book is really about how trauma reverberates down through generations and through families. And at the end of it, you start to understand not just how damaged this narrator is, you start to also see him try to pull together healing from other relationships in his life. And he never quite arrives at a place where everything's A-okay. But you appreciate the struggle that he's in a way that you couldn't at the beginning of the story. These two books are about two different groups of people with, you know, very different stories. You know, one is about refugees from the other side of the world, and another one is about Native Americans, somewhat closer to home. But I think both books are important because they introduce me to a world that isn't necessarily about me. And it introduces me to a world where people live with risks that I am protected from, and risks that it wouldn't occur to me that I am protected from. And the point of literature like this isn't for me to sort of wring my hands and think, you know, gee golly, I'm lucky to be, you know, a middle-class white guy. It's a chance for me, coming from a different background, to see the world from a very different vantage point and hopefully do my part to build a world that isn't just about me, but one where no matter who you are, your life matters. To my mind, America is about building a society where whatever else happens, you never have to prove to anyone that you matter.
I am Dr. Egypt Grandison. To my students, they actually call me Dr. G. I'm an assistant professor in the business department at BSU, and I am actually a newbie. I moved to Bemidji last year, August 2019, and I am still growing. I'm still getting to know Bemidji and the residents there, so it's kind of growing on me a little bit. My specialization in business, in the business department, is actually HR. So diversity is a big thing that I do incorporate into my classes. Even in the regular classes that are not tailored to the HR courses, I still try to speak about diversity because that's the world we live in. You know, we live in a diverse world. And with everything that's going on, even things that are happening now or prior to when I moved to Bemidji, I kind of speak about that in the courses as well. One of the things I do with my students, I create a safe space for them where they're able to, from the beginning, once we do introductions, they know from that day, the first day we lay eyes on each other, that I am there for you no matter what the situation is. My door is always open. You have my contact information, whatever you need. If I don't have it, I know how to get it. So I try to create a safe space. So if they have things that they need to speak about, I'm there to listen. So they know that from the beginning to the end. Now, do they utilize that? Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, but I still feel that having that open door policy does help with especially things that are going on now. The other thing I try to do is I try to be very transparent, not to put too much of my personal business out there, but enough to let them know that, hey, I'm always a student. I'm still a student. You know, I was you or I am you a few months ago, a few years ago. I was sitting on the opposite end of the desk or the chair, so I get it. And I typically share stories with them. You know, I share some of my dreams, my goals, things that I had to do, things that I had to sacrifice in order to get to where I am. And I always tell them, sometimes you have to do what you don't want to do in order to do what you want to do later on in life. So those are the few things that I do. Now, as far as a book that I've read or I would recommend that does kind of fall in line with the Black Lives Matter movement and everything that's going on now, it's actually called The N-Word, Who Can Say It and Who Shouldn't Say It. And it's by Jabari Asim, and you can get it on Amazon. It is a Kindle book as well, and Audible, I think, but I'm not much of an Audible person. I read out loud, so I guess I am the Audible person, I guess. The book is not very long, but it's broken up into 5 sections. It kind of gives you information on the N-word, how it was created, who said it, how they said it, how it changed over the years, and still how it's evolving in today. It also speaks about how people created the word and how offensive it is to the Black African-American culture. But it also explains how we took a negative word and we turned it into a positive word. So those are a few things that I really enjoyed about the book, especially the history of the word, because I can tell somebody not to say something and someone comes back and says why. I need to be able to explain it to them as to why they shouldn't say it. It's almost like when you're growing up and your mom says, well, don't do something, and you say why. And typically before she knocks you out, she may explain to you why you shouldn't do it or why I'm going to discipline you behind it. So I believe in facts and I believe in research and I believe in people being very knowledgeable of certain things and learning, getting the knowledge and asking questions too.
This is a special edition of What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. We've been hearing about books that can help us understand the systemic racism that has persisted throughout time in this country and the world, but was highlighted once again with the murder of George Floyd and subsequent protests and events which are still unfolding. One Book, One Minnesota is a community reading program introduced in May as a response to the isolation many of us were feeling during the COVID-19 sheltering in place. A collective reading of a single book to help Minnesotans come together as a virtual community. The next statewide read is A Good Time for the Truth, Race in Minnesota, edited by Minnesota writer Sun Yang Shin. In a statement put out by the Friends of the St. Paul Public Library, one of the partners of the program, One Book, One Minnesota was initiated in May and meant to bring Minnesotans together to share the collective joy of reading. But since then, the Minneapolis police murdered George Floyd, and led by Black community members and activists, the world erupted in grief, protest, and perhaps finally a reckoning that we must confront institutional and systemic racism. And that means all of us. Reading this book in community offers some Minnesotans the opportunity to see their experiences broadly shared and others a chance to educate themselves and to discover ways to act on their convictions. And that's from the president of the Friends for the St. Paul Public Library. A Good Time for the Truth, Race in Minnesota features essays on what it's like to live as a person of color in Minnesota and includes writers Keo Kalia Yang, Rodrigo Sanchez Chavaria, Shannon Gibney, David Lawrence Grant, Hyde Erdrich, and many more. The ebook will be available for the next couple of months through eBook Minnesota. We'll include a link on our KAXE webpage. Along with the books you've heard about so far today, there are many, many other books that people have been talking about for a while, especially these last couple of weeks. Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, written as a letter to his son, he addresses what it's like to be Black in America today. Historian Ibram X. Kendi has a couple of books that people have been talking about, Stamped from the Beginning, and also How to Be an Anti-Racist, where he helps the reader see all forms of racism clearly, understand their consequences, and work to oppose them in our systems and in ourselves. The New Jim Crow Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness by Michelle Alexander. She argues that by targeting black men through the war on drugs and decimating communities of color, the U.S. criminal justice system functions as a contemporary system of racial control, even as it formally adheres to the principles of colorblindness. Why are all the black kids sitting together in the cafeteria and other conversations about race by Beverly Daniel Tatum? She argues that straight talk about our racial identities is essential if we're serious about enabling communications across racial and ethnic divides. And Hood Feminism, Notes from the Women That the Movement Forgot by Mickey Kendall. She makes the point that the modern feminist movement has failed to address the needs of all but a few women. And there are a lot of children's and young adult books that can help our young people learn about the Black Lives Matter movement as well as racial injustices. Dear Martin by Nick Stone is a novel loosely based on a series of true events involving the shooting deaths of unarmed African-American teenagers. March, a novel by Andrew Aiden and John Lewis, is book one of a graphic novel trilogy, a vivid firsthand account of Congressman John Lewis's lifelong struggle for civil and human rights. Brown Girl Dreaming by Jacqueline Woodson. It discusses the author's childhood as an African-American growing up in the 1960s in South Carolina and New York. And Angie Thomas's novel, The Hate U Give, a teenage girl witnesses the fatal shooting of her childhood best friend at the hands of a police officer. And consider some classic works by Black writers as well. Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, Beloved by Toni Morrison, the autobiography of Malcolm X, James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time, and other writers such as Audre Lorde and Zora Neale Hurston, just to name a few. Clearly, there is no shortage of books to read to learn about systemic racism and the history leading up to the Black Lives Matter movement, and hopefully you'll feel more informed and inspired to contribute to change. We'll provide a list of all the books mentioned on the show on our website at kaxe.org and on our What We're Reading Facebook page. You can find these books at your local library. Some of them are freely available online. Or consider buying them from an independent bookstore. They could really use your support during this time as well. We heard music on today's show from Alabama Shakes, Irma Thomas, Black Pumas, and Miles Davis. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. What We're Reading is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Here's Sharon Jones.
This land is your land. I tell ya, this land. for you.